I now present to you the 16th President of the Great College, Dr. Mark J.
Joining me here today. Delegates from sister institutions, including, I have to mention, Harvard. It's good to have you here. Trustees and good friends at McMurray College, students, faculty, and staff, members of my family who are here with me. Thank you all for being here. And many close friends, close and longtime colleagues, people I knew way before I ever met Wayne Westerwelle, are here. John and Tim, thanks for coming. Thanks for taking time to join us. So, I have come to this place today because so many of you here have contributed to everything I've done before. And for all you've done for me, I extend my thanks. Thank you very much. Your presence here is more than symbolic, however. It is important because the mission upon which I now embark is one that will require your continued interest and involvement. Everyone here. It is most humbling to step into this presence. This storied old institution, McMurray College, 17 decades and counting. Founded 14 years before Abe Lincoln was elected, Mac is one of America's oldest colleges. Now working together, we will redefine its future. I will no doubt ask many here to help make that future nothing short of grand. Today, as I experience the extraordinary honor of this inaugural ceremony, I'm pleased to be able to offer these few comments about our society, about the Academy, and about a new era of success here at McMurray. Of course, the central focus of what we do here at Mac is learning and the teaching that promotes it. So, it should be no surprise that some of my comments will focus on these topics as they relate to the importance of education as both an institution and an enterprise in our society. Now, specifically, I want to address the very purposes of education that are so distinctive in American society. These observations find their roots in the works and words of many others who have been participants and observers who've come before us. And I give them all the credit for this. I've learned from them. Above all else, American education has historically sought and continues to pursue, in my view, and the views of others, four goals. These goals might also be described as searches. Searches for freedom, for equality, for community, and yes, for success. When our nation's founders addressed educational issues, which they did far more often than most textbooks ever reference, they did so in largely political terms. They viewed education through a political lens. They spoke and wrote about education as a guarantor of liberty and freedom. In fact, on almost every occasion in which the founders addressed education, they did so in ways that confirmed their belief that the future of our democratic republic depended upon the education of its citizens. As Jefferson put it 3 years after he wrote the Declaration of Independence, a system of public education will, and I quote, make the people safe as they are the ultimate guardians of their own liberty. Even though we today often and correctly relate education to economic success, the founders, whom we so deeply respect, saw education as the best assurance of political liberty. When ratification of the Constitution was being debated a decade later, Jefferson was among those who insisted that a Bill of Rights be added as a condition of approval. He was especially concerned that the freedoms and liberties, which had been so dearly won, would be explicitly protected. Among our constitutionally guaranteed rights, none is more precious than the free exchange of ideas assured by our freedoms of speech and of the press. It has long been a major goal of schools and colleges in the United States to protect the open exchange of ideas. We need only look back 90 years to the 1925 arrest and trial of John Thomas Scopes, Dayton, Tennessee, to recognize the need to protect the free exchange of ideas. Now, you, of course, remember that Mr. Scopes was a public school teacher. You all remember this, I'm sure. Was a public school teacher who was arrested and tried in an American court for teaching his students about Charles Darwin and his concept of natural selection. Now, of course, Mr. Scopes had to have an attorney. There are attorneys in the room. We love you all. When asked about his reason for defending John Scopes in what was then called the Monkey Trial, Attorney Clarence Darrow declared without hesitation that it was, and here I quote him, to prevent bigots and ignoramuses from controlling the educational system of the United States, end quote. Well, he might have put that another way. Darrow certainly wasn't all that delicate in his choice of words, but his objective was certainly a sound one. Another possibly more dramatic illustration of the need to protect freedom of expression can be found in the powerful influence exerted by Wisconsin's junior senator, Joseph McCarthy, during the 1950s. Many of us will remember this. And others remember it from their history lessons, I'm sure. McCarthy's red-baiting tactics employed methods that were clearly meant to repress our cherished freedom of expression. The careers and lives of many public and professional people were ruined because they may have once stated a position that appeared to be sympathetic to communism or to Russia. McCarthy and his followers labeled such statements as, and you may remember this word, com-simp, coining a new word that meant sympathetic to communism. During this Red Scare climate, teachers and professors were required to sign loyalty oaths, to teach politically correct views, and above all, to instill a fear of communism and socialism in their students. Political conditions got so out of hand that local self-appointed and self-anointed so-called pro-American groups scoured our nation's libraries to ferret out books that they found un-American. Now,